government and the company, I think, is highly improbable. No one in none of the eight who are under arrest had anything personal to gain.
But the government, and has the U.S. been held accountable?
No. I mean, I think, you know, I think the U.S. wouldn't. I don't think the U.S. government would, wouldn't admit to bear any responsibility to Bertha's assassination. You know, I think it's important to remember I interviewed her in 2013, just around the elections, and she was publicly denouncing the fact that she had been told and had been made aware that her name appeared at the top of a military hit list in which I think there were 16 activists. She was one of 16 activists. She was telling people this. She publicly denounced.
We're going to continue this conversation after the broadcast. And we'll post it online. Nina Lakhani, thanks so much for joining us. We have a social media full-time fellowship. Check our website. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, and the time is 5 o'clock. Coming up next is your KBOO Evening News.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Salif Keita Live in Portland on Friday, March 3rd at the Dow Event Center in Portland. Salif Keita is known as the golden voice of Afropop. He combines traditional West African styles with influences from Europe and the Americas. The Spiritual Brothers will open the show. Again, that's Salif Keita Live in Portland on Friday, March 3rd at the Dow Event Center, 631 Northeast Grand Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the premiere screening of Precipice Award-funded animation project, Jen Likes Heroin, on Thursday, March 9th at 7 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. Jen Likes Heroin is an animated short film which takes place at the long-defunct X-Ray Cafe. Following the animation, there will be a showing of the documentary about the X-Ray Cafe called X-Ray Visions, and a short acoustic set by Sean Krogan of The Pinnacles and Cracker Bash. Again, that's a screening of X-Ray Visions and Jen Likes Heroin and a live performance by Sean Krogan on Thursday, March 9th at 7 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program has been made in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from ADX, a collaborative hub offering access to shared wood, metal, screen printing, jewelry, and digital design shops through a monthly membership program. The ADX Makerspace, Learning Center, and Fabrication Shop allows people to bring their ideas to life. Open every day at 417 Southeast 11th in Portland and at adxportland.com. Coming up next, your Friday KBOO Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler is proposing a new set of rules to govern the conduct of citizens attending city council meetings.
A bipartisan group of Oregon lawmakers is trying to push through a law to protect the personal information of cannabis customers in Oregon.
And Vice President Mike Pence frequently used a private email server to conduct public business while he was governor of Indiana.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, March 3rd, 2017, the 42nd day of the Trumpocalypse. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Ray Bodwell. A bipartisan group of Oregon lawmakers is trying to push through a law to protect the personal information of cannabis customers in Oregon. The move comes in response to comments Attorney General Jeff Sessions said that the Justice Department will be reviewing Obama-era guidelines. Those guidelines gave states leeway in passing marijuana laws. Fearing a crackdown by the Trump administration, the legislative committee that sets Oregon's pot policies has proposed a rule that would require marijuana retailers to destroy the personal information of customers within 48 hours. Democratic State Senator Floyd Prozanski is one of the bill's sponsors. He expressed concern about the federal government stockpiling user information and said, quote, "We as legislators have a duty to protect our citizens." The measure is scheduled for a hearing on Tuesday, and if it's passed by the legislature, it is expected to be quickly signed into law by Governor Kate Brown. Brown has vowed to fight federal interference in Oregon's pot market. The state collected over $60 million in tax revenue on marijuana sales in 2016.
On Monday, undocumented members of our community gathered in front of the secretive Portland Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, headquarters building on Southwest McAdam Avenue. They were there to demonstrate their lack of fear of the predatory ICE activity that has been reported in and beyond the Portland metro area. KABU reporter Kanan Schlesinger spoke to members of our community, some of them KABU programmers, about their experience after sharing their stories in the face of ICE.
Sin papeles!
Sin miedo!
Sin papeles!
Sin miedo!
Sin papeles!
Sin miedo!
As you guys notice right now, when we're together as a community, that's what they do. They hide. They walk away. They walk away because they see that we are a community, that we're going to fight back. When they catch us out on the streets by ourselves, they take advantage of that. They take advantage of the fact that we are afraid. But again, when we show that we're not afraid, that we show that we come together as a community, they walk away.
For all of you, what are the next steps?
The next step is to keep fighting. Obviously, we're not going to stop here. This message needs to reach across the nation, and more organizations need to echo this. We all need to take care to organize ourselves like we're currently doing, to have lawyers. This was definitely a risk, but we have to start somewhere, and we're going to continue fighting.
Fue arriesgado, pero por algo se debe de empezar. Y vamos a seguir luchando.
Yeah, I just think also like there's a lot of people being detained and deported that like nobody's listening to them and nobody is paying attention to them. And I think like Jaime said, like highlighting their stories and providing support for the families is what the community needs, as well as being empowered. Like you have a lot of amazing people that were here, including Luna, who told their story, and I think a lot more people can benefit from that. And like the community more needs more empowerment more than terrorizing. Yeah.
I think we need to continue impressing upon people that we refuse to be afraid. This isn't anything new. There have always been deportations. The mechanism of deportation is something created by the Obama administration, and it's continuing to this day. So let's keep telling people to not be afraid, and let's organize ourselves.
What does it mean to you to be here in front of Immigration Customs Enforcement?
Significa salir de las sombras.
It represents leaving the shadows to show them that we can't live in fear.
Have you done something like this before? Have you confronted authorities and the law like this?
No, esta es la primera vez.
No, this is the first time we've done this. Again, we won't live in fear, and everything that's happened in the past, however many days, is so escalated that the community is scared of leaving their homes for even the essentials.
Now, as I'm thinking about what's going to happen next,
Después de eso, ¿qué
and after this, what ICE is going to do. For you, what are the next steps?
¿Cuáles son los pasos que vienen?
Esa es una buena pregunta.
This is a good question. The truth is, we don't really know what's going to happen. But at the very least, they now know that we're organizing. And above all that, we're not afraid of them.
What can we do to stay together in a group and not be overly vulnerable as individuals?
The best tactic is to organize ourselves. The more organized we are, the more we can push forward and be strong together.
What's going to be the theme of your next show?
We're going to keep going with the theme of immigration. We're crossing borders, right? I mean, personally, every time I talk to my family, specifically my parents in Mexico, every time I talk to them, it's a relief that I'm okay. First of all, that I'm still walking the streets. This is also something I regret. But the fear and anguish crosses borders.
If you could say something to your family and community in other parts of the United States, in Mexico, what would you say to them?
I'd say that we're all humans, and we all deserve opportunities. There shouldn't be these artificial borders, the segregation, because we're all one.
Gracias, Carmen.
Those were the voices of undocumented Portlanders from last Monday's action in front of the Portland ICE headquarters building. Next Monday, March 6th, local grassroots organizations Milenio and Voz Hispana Cambio Comunitario will gather in front of ICE headquarters at 4310 Southwest McAdam Avenue at 4:30 p.m. as part of an effort to push ICE out of the state of Oregon.
Citing frequent interruptions and the inability to get city business done, Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler is proposing a new set of rules to govern the conduct of citizens attending city council meetings. Recently, protesters have taken over the council meetings and have refused to leave, and the mayor stated that the rule change is necessary to ensure that people who sign up to speak to the council actually get the chance to do so. The mayor claimed that the individuals who want to testify often back out because they are afraid of being heckled. The mayor said the new rules will allow him to eject people from city council if he decides they are being disruptive. Crowds have become increasingly disruptive in the weeks since the shooting of Quantas Hayes by the Portland Police Bureau, but rather than let them speak, the mayor put the city council on the city hall on lockdown and closed the meetings. In response, activists have called for a picket outside of next Wednesday morning's council meeting. The protesters are demanding that Wheeler resign unless he can show that he is taking steps to increase shelter for the poor, restrain the police response to protest, and stop police killing of black people.
A recently introduced bill would permanently protect a part of the North Umpqua River known for being a unique wildlife habitat. Eric Tegedoff of the Oregon News Service has this report.
Members of Oregon's congressional delegation introduced a bill on Thursday to protect some crucial habitat for wild steelhead on the North Umpqua River. The bill is known as the Frank and Jean Moore Wild Steelhead Special Management Area Act, named in honor of two stewards of the river. Frank Moore is a World War II veteran who found solace on the river after his service in Europe, and his wife Jeannie is a botanist and conservationist. Dean Finnerty, a fly fishing guide on the North Umpqua, describes fishing on the river as therapeutic.
As you're making these casts, graceful casts, back and forth with your fly rod and presenting this fly as it swings across this glassy, smooth current, and all of a sudden the surface just erupts with an 8 or a 10 pound bullet attacking your fly.
Finnerty adds that the Moors are much loved by the Umpqua River community. The legislation was introduced by Senators Ron Wyden and Jeff Merkley and Congressman Peter DeFazio and would permanently protect about 100,000 acres around Steamboat Creek in Douglas County. The bill would give special protections to land that is already public in order to guard its rare habitat for summer steelhead. Jeff Dose, a retired fisheries biologist who worked in the North Umpqua, says it's important to protect and preserve clean water for these fish. He says one area of the river attracts hundreds of steelhead for an awe-inspiring spectacle during the summer.
It's an incredible sight, and I mean, I get chills every time I go there, and I've seen it hundreds of times, and I still get chills when I go up there and see those fish.
Rusty Leininger is an Iraq War veteran and founder of Source One Serenity, coordinating fly fishing retreats for veterans on the Umpqua River. Leininger says Umpqua fly fishing is a healing experience that also has inspired veterans to do more than fish.
I've actually had a bigger interest in conservation as opposed to just fly fishing.
Support for this reporting was provided by the Pew Charitable Trusts. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for Counterspin at 5:30, followed by Bread and Roses at 6. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather calls for periods of rain with temperatures in the mid-40s. The rain may mix with snow Saturday night. East of the Cascades and Hood River, you can expect a milder day with afternoon showers and temperatures in the low 50s. On this day in 1991, Los Angeles police officers severely beat motorist Rodney King after a traffic stop. The beating was captured on amateur video and later led to riots when the police officers involved were acquitted. The quote of the day is from Rodney King, who said, quote, "I realize that I will always be the poster child for police brutality, but I can try to use that as a positive force for healing and restraint."
Now here's KBOO's Ray Bodwell with a review and commentary on this week's fabrications from the Trump administration.
You're saying it's a falsehood, and Sean Spicer, our press secretary, gave alternative facts.
This week, the American people thought they saw a major transformation in Mr. Trump. He appeared to transform himself from shrieking madman, spouting half-truths and berating the press, to the sober leader of the free world. The transition miraculously appeared during Tuesday night's speech to the joint session of Congress. This speech is traditionally given early in the first term of a new president and is the functional equivalent of a State of the Union address. It gives the president the opportunity to outline his plans to Congress and the American people. And despite having taken 5 weeks of relentless abuse at the hands of Mr. Trump, the talking heads of mainstream media ate it up. From Brian Williams of MSNBC.
Easily the most traditional speech he has given in public life, the most speech-like speech.
To Chris Wallace of Fox News.
I feel like tonight Donald Trump became the president of the United States.
Almost all the mainstream pundits agreed that Mr. Trump's new tone was indeed presidential. But did any of them actually listen to what Trump said?
We're going to stop the regulations that threaten the future and livelihood of our great coal miners. We have begun to drain the swamp of government corruption. Obamacare is collapsing, and we must act decisively. And we will soon begin the construction of a great, great wall along our southern border. Our neglected inner cities will see a rebirth of hope, safety, and opportunity. To protect our citizens, I have directed the Department of Justice to form a task force on reducing violent crime. The vast majority of individuals convicted of terrorism and terrorism-related offenses since 9/11 came here from outside of our country.
The delivery may have mellowed and language toned down, but the message is no different than a typical Trump stump speech. It's still a message that vilifies immigrants, threatens the rollback of the Affordable Care Act, as well as clean water and clean air regulations, and paints a picture of a crumbling America where crime is rampant. Later, his homage to fallen Navy SEAL Ryan Owens, who died along with 30 civilians in the botched Yemen raid, appeared heartfelt, but did he really need to follow that up with this flagrant bit of nonsense?
I just spoke to our great General Mattis, who reconfirmed that, and I quote, Ryan was a part of a highly successful raid that generated large amounts of vital intelligence.
He then used human props as he zeroed in on one of his favorite claims, that a large number of Americans have been the victim of violent crimes by illegal immigrants.
I have ordered the Department of Homeland Security to create an office to serve American victims. The office is called VOICE, Victims of Immigration Crime Engagement. We are providing a voice to those who have been ignored by our media and silenced by special interests.
This nonsense has been refuted more times than anyone can count. And why didn't he also take that opportunity to showcase the families of African Americans who've lost a member to police violence, or the families of the two citizens of India that were shot in an apparent hate crime in Kansas by an individual who later bragged of shooting two Iranians, or Jewish Americans who have seen their cemeteries desecrated and the community centers inundated with bomb threats in recent weeks? His opening comments against racism and hate cannot undo the damage of his previous 18 months of bigotry, misogyny, and xenophobia. The president's speech to Congress was about 10% shorter than the speech he gave to his base in Melbourne, Florida, a couple weeks back. But if you remove his relentless attacks on the press that peppered the Melbourne speech, the word count is about the same, and the message hasn't really changed. The language has simply been toned down to broaden his acceptance. And it appears to be working, as polls the morning after his speech to Congress showed. But we can't forget that Donald Trump is an experienced actor who had a very successful reality TV show. And if we let a gifted actor's change in the tone of his voice lull us, or more precisely con us, into a false sense of security and acceptance, we'll end up in even deeper trouble than we already are. For KBOO, this is Ray Bodwell. In what can only be described as a surreal turn of events, former Texas Governor Rick Perry was confirmed as Energy Secretary, and former neurosurgeon Ben Carson was confirmed to lead the Department of Housing and Urban Development. Both men, who had opposed Donald Trump during the Republican primaries, passed their Senate confirmation vote with identical margins of 62-37 and were sworn in before the end of the day. During the 2012 presidential primaries, Perry had stated that he would shut down the Department of Energy if elected president. He recently admitted that he had no idea on the complete role of the department, and he regretted his earlier comments. And despite the fact that he entered the 2016 Republican presidential primaries, Carson recently stated that he lacks the government or management experience to run a federal agency. Despite their underwhelming qualifications, both Perry and Carson were seen as far less controversial than many of Trump's cabinet nominees, and their nominations received relatively restrained opposition.
Yesterday, it was reported that Vice President Mike Pence frequently used a private email server to conduct public business while he was governor of Indiana. The news became public when Republican Governor Eric Holcomb was forced to release about 30 pages of emails in response to a Freedom of Information request. According to reports, Pence regularly used his private email account in correspondence with top advisors, including discussions about Homeland Security issues. The use of a private email account is not prohibited by law in Indiana. Pence's email account was hacked last summer while he was still serving as that state's governor. The vice president was a vocal critic of former Secretary of State and Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton during the run-up to last year's presidential election. Republicans were quick to point out the differences between Pence's use of a private email server and Clinton's, but opponents noted that Governor Holcomb refused to release some of the emails because he considered them too sensitive to share.
Wednesday, the Senate confirmed Ryan Zinke as head of the Department of the Interior. During Zinke's hearings, he said he plans to support efforts to use the Congressional Review Act to reverse a Bureau of Land Management rule cutting waste methane at oil and gas sites. FSRN's Hannah Lee Myers reports.
Representative Ryan Zinke's appointment as Secretary of the Interior had bipartisan support, and analysts are crediting his diverse policy stances. On one hand, he's backed expanding federal governance of public land and defended water conservation. And during confirmation hearings, he disagreed with President Trump's position on climate change.
First of all, climate is changing. That's undisputable. The second thing is man has had an influence. I think that's undisputable as well.
However, Zinke has also come out in defense of the oil and gas industry, criticizing the Obama administration for excessive environmental regulations.
We've seen time and time again excessive overreach, not based on scientific data, but based on an agenda.
It's an argument the GOP-controlled Congress has used to target a handful of regulations that President Obama put in place at the end of his term, using the obscure Congressional Review Act. One of them is a Bureau of Land Management rule that limits methane leaks, flaring, and venting from mining operations. During the Senate committee hearings, Zinke agreed to support reversing the rule, while at the same time acknowledging the problems the rule is designed to address.
We're venting a lot, and we're wasting energy, and that is troubling to me.
Deputy Director for Energy and Climate with the Wilderness Society, Josh Mintel, cites an ICF International and Environmental Defense Fund study showing just how costly that methane waste could be.
$330 million worth of taxpayer-owned natural gas is wasted every year. I mean, this is enough natural gas to heat 1.5 million homes a year.
The oil and gas industry has spent millions lobbying against those statistics, citing a study by Environmental Resources Management claiming the BLM flaring rule could shut down up to 40% of wells on federal lands, costing millions more than limiting waste would save. Dan Haley, president and CEO of the Colorado Oil and Gas Association, also claims the rule is unnecessary, given that since 1990, methane emissions from natural gas systems have fallen by 18.6%.
We have been spending billions of dollars as an industry on leak detection and repair programs to make sure that we're doing all we can to keep that methane in the pipe.
Josh Mantell of the Wilderness Society says the oil and gas industry is underestimating the value those methane sequestration programs have on the economy and job markets.
There is an actual industry that is popping up and growing around methane mitigation. In 46 states, you have some kind of representative of the methane mitigation industry in over 500 different locations.
The BLM's methane rule passed after 5 years of work with 300,000 public comments. But the GOP's plan to use the Congressional Review Act to reverse the rule could negate those efforts. Under the CRA, not only can Congress rapidly reverse rules finalized at the end of the previous president's term, they can do so with little to no input from the public. Only used once before the Trump administration took office, the CRA also blocks the creation of substantially similar regulations once a given rule is overturned. That's why Colorado Representative Jared Polis and others say opponents of the methane rule would be using the wrong tool if they utilize the CRA approach.
It doesn't make sense to use the CRA to repeal this BLM methane rule. Regardless of the rules that they're impacting, they're reckless, blunt tool, and they're not the right instrument for honest, thoughtful legislating.
The details of coming budget cuts at the EPA are murky. But what's clear is the White House plans to deeply gut the agency, with clean air programs in the crosshairs. The EPA estimates gas leaks make up almost 30% of U.S. methane emissions. And studies show that although far less abundant, methane is 87 times more powerful as a greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. With the Interior Department's purview over offshore drilling, federal lands, and relations with Native American Indian tribes, coupled with Zinke's position on climate change, methane mitigation could be a priority for the incoming Interior Secretary. Hanalei Myers, FSRN, Denver.
A Mexican congressman has climbed to the top of the 30-foot fence on the U.S.-Mexican border to demonstrate the absurdity of it. Congressman Braulio Guerra, who represents the state of Querétaro, tweeted photos and videos of himself sitting atop the fence that separates Tijuana from San Diego. In the video, Guerra said, quote, "It's easy, and it shows how unnecessary this project and this political rhetoric from Donald Trump is," unquote. Many American lawmakers have also expressed their opposition to the wall. The congressional representative whose district shares the longest border with Mexico is Texas Republican Will Hurd. Recently, he said, quote, building the wall is the most expensive and least effective way to secure the border, unquote. Heard's district shares 800 miles of border with Mexico, and you would think that would give him a unique insight. Nonetheless, during Tuesday's speech to the joint session of Congress, the president reiterated his intention to build a great, great wall. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Kanan Schlesinger and Ray Bodwell. The producer is Ray Bodwell. Our engineer is Jenna Yokoyama. The KBOO Evening News Director and the KBOO Evening News Director is Zelos Marchant. And the Evening Public Affairs Director is Kanan Schlesinger. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Liam Delta. Coming up tomorrow, or rather on Monday morning, at 7, Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 on More Talk Radio, Cecil and Celeste take your calls. At 9, social and political commentary on the Old Mole Variety Hour. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Locus Focus. Barbara Bernstein checks back in with the former executive at Oracle. He resigned in protest to his company joining Trump's transition team. At 11, Health Watch makes a case against sugar with author Gary Taubes. He'll delve into America's history with sugar and will explain what research shows about our addiction to sweets. And at 11:30, it's Madness Radio, voices and visions from outside mental health. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not yet a member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate.